Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very warm welcome to this edition of DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Just go to our page, DW Africa, and leave us your comments. On the stories that we will be covering today.
Coming up, Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo delivers his State of Nation address, and among key issues, he promises to create thousands of jobs for unemployed youth.
Looking for a job is not easy. It's about whom you know. If you don't know anybody, you find it difficult, very difficult.
Southern regions in Nigeria vow to back incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari in the next year's elections despite deep cracks within Buhari's ruling coalition and declining popularity. We hear why.
The reason why his popularity is declining is because people have high expectation on the president. When he came into government, people see him as a savior, as a person who will redeem Nigeria.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you.
But first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. A United States-backed assault on the so-called Islamic State turned its head and killed dozens of people associated with the Syrian government forces. The assault took place after pro-Assad forces attacked one of the headquarters of the Syrian Democratic Forces, which the U.S. supports against the Syrian government. The Syrian government responded by attacking opposition-held areas near the capital of Damascus, killing at least 19 residents, according to the Syrian Civil Defense. A large-scale protest dubbed a Day of Anger in the capital of Chad failed to take off this Thursday after the government banned the protest, citing security reasons. Only a few protesters turned up to march against new austerity measures. Their protest came a day after the government suspended 10 opposition parties for supporting trade union calls for protests against the proposed austerity measures. Ghanaian President Nana Akufo-Addo delivered his State of the Nation address on Thursday. He said his administration has worked hard to stem youth unemployment in the country, but there is still much to be done.
The subject of job creation has to be at the top of my agenda. The number of young people who cannot find work is staggering and a threat to our national security. I'm determined to work to guarantee and secure the future of the young men and women of our country. Every major policy that my government has implemented in the past year has been essentially about the youth.
Ghana's labor force survey put the 2017 youth unemployment rate at 11.9%. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The Gambia has been readmitted to the Commonwealth of Nations after its application was unanimously approved by member states. The application reverses former President Yahya Jammeh and his decision to withdraw from the Confederation in 2013. The Gambian flag was subsequently raised in a ceremony at the Commonwealth Secretariat's headquarters in London. North Korean state media is reporting that the foreign ministry has no plans to meet with the United States during the Winter Olympics scheduled to begin tomorrow. The decision comes after U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said he was willing to meet with North Korean officials during Friday's opening ceremonies in South Korea. Pence said this Thursday that it will support its southern ally against the hermit nation.
Allow me to just assure you and the people of South Korea that the United States of America will continue to stand shoulder to shoulder in our effort to bring maximum pressure to bear on North Korea until that time comes when they finally and permanently and irreversibly abandon their nuclear and ballistic missile ambitions.
Both North Korean and U.S. officials will attend the opening ceremonies in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Former Bangladesh Prime Minister Khaleda Zia has been sentenced to 5 years in prison for the misappropriation of public funds. This ruling means she may be barred from elections in December. Zia is accused of transferring 21 million takas, equivalent to a quarter of a million U.S. dollars, from a charity to her personal trust. Zia claims the accusations are politically motivated. Police had to use tear gas on protesters who defied a protest ban to show their support for Zia. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
This is Africa Link coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, and we are also live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
That's right indeed, Eunice. We begin today's program in Ghana, where President Nana Akufo-Addo has been delivering the State of Nation address to highlight progress made since he was elected as head of state and also outline his plans for the nation. Akufo-Addo, who is in his second year as Ghana's president, promised to create at least 100,000 jobs for the youth in health, revenue collection, and agriculture sectors to make them more productive and further boost economic growth. From Accra, Isaac Kelechi sent this report.
Ghana's employment situation has become a major talking point in recent times, and this is why in his State of the Nation address, President Nana Akufo-Addo promised to create thousands of jobs for the unemployed. However, fresh graduates remain skeptical whether they will get the promised jobs.
Looking for a job is not easy. It's about whom you know. If you don't know anybody, you find it difficult, very difficult. Even if you know anybody, the person who will ask you, go and come, is very tough.
Many of the graduates complete school, no work to do. You have to suffer for years even to get a common work to do. It's even very hard. In Ghana, work is very hard.
According to a recent survey by Ghana's labor force, more than 1.2 million Ghanaians remain unemployed. And according to Akufo-Addo, fixing unemployment has been a major challenge of his administration.
The subject of job creation has to be at the top of my agenda. The number of young people who cannot find work is staggering and a threat to our national security. I'm determined to work to guarantee and secure the future of the young men and women of our country. Every major policy that my government has implemented in the past year has been essentially about the youth.
Business analyst Ken Mona said fixing the unemployment situation in Ghana has become daunting because the needed attention to the private sector hasn't been forthcoming.
You speak to a lot of these startup businesses and entrepreneurs, and I think that the right environment has not been created yet. They still do not have the environment that would allow them to be able to expand and make the necessary profit that would get them to employ people. And so, for instance, access to credit, most of them have always complained. They borrow at high interest rates and they actually reel under those ones because those are challenges.
Mona also thinks entrepreneurs and business owners hold the key to creating jobs for the unemployed and must be taken seriously. For now, Ghanaian youth hope that the president's promise of creating 100,000 jobs materializes by the end of 2018.
Isaac Kelechi reporting about the 100,000 jobs that President Nana Akufo-Addo has promised to give the youth. And Eunice, we have so many comments, coming in.
Yes, we have quite a number of comments coming in. And just for our listeners, you can also send us your comments through WhatsApp. Just visit our page, that's dw.com/Africa, and you'll find instructions on how to get to our WhatsApp. Now, Abdullahi Kaliel wrote to us and said he should stop complaining. Let him fulfill his campaign promised, or else the unemployment Ghanaian youth could gang up and vote him out.
Ambrose Koech says, I'm listening live from Nairobi, Kenya. Many thanks, Ambrose. And Ahmed Safo says, well done, Nana Akufo, for the promise, I think.
Yes, another person here called Adu Konaibaz says, how can a president who has decided to create jobs for his citizens be questioned if he's on the right track or not?
Ebenezer Anja Tawo says, Ghana's president has great vision for his people and Africa. Let's keep praying for him to accomplish this vision.
Well, thank you so much for your comments. Keep them coming. Now, elsewhere in the world, South Korea's President Moon Jae-in plans to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's sister and other senior officials when they visit the South on Friday for the Winter Olympics. There will, however, be no official meeting between North Korean officials and the U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, as earlier reports suggested. Eddie Micah Jr. with more.
The Pyeongchang Winter Olympics in South Korea begin on Friday, and for the first time since the North-South divide, the two states will be entering the opening ceremony of the Games together. Dubbed the Peace Olympics, there are plans for South Korean President Moon Jae-in to meet with North Korean senior officials, according to South Korean presidential spokesman Kim Il-jim.
북한 고위급 대표단은 9일 A North Korean high-level delegation will attend the opening ceremony of the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics on February 9. President Moon will meet with the delegation on February 10 and have a luncheon with the delegates.
오찬을 함께할 예정입니다.
Kim Yo-jong, younger sister of North Korean leader, will be the first member of the ruling family to visit the South since the 1950-53 Korean War. Though unclear how the meeting will go, many view it as a step in the right direction after a year of heightened tensions between the two states over the North's nuclear and missile programs. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence has arrived in South Korea for the Games as a representative of the U.S., but earlier reports of a possible meeting between him and North Korean officials have been refuted by the North's foreign ministry. As tensions persist between the U.S. and North Korea, it is the hope that the Winter Games will create the avenue to just focus on the Games and not the war of words between the two countries.
Eddie Michael Jr. reporting.
Now, Nigeria's ruling coalition, the All Progressive Party in southern regions, has vowed to back President Muhammadu Buhari in next year's general elections, despite major cracks and divisions within the party. Buhari, who hails from northern Nigeria, is currently facing dissent, especially from his strongholds. The mantle of power is so heavy in Nigeria that presidential candidates must have the full backing of party stalwarts if they are to win an election. So why is popularity slumped drastically? A question I put to Abdullahi Tankobala from DW's Hausa department.
The reason why his popularity is declining is because people have high expectation on the president. When he came into government, people see him as a savior, as a person who will redeem Nigeria from the decay that has happened in the country for quite long. But as time goes by, he came with three visions. One was to fight corruption, and secondly is to provide employment to the youths. Then thirdly, to rejuvenate the infrastructure. On the fight against corruption, a lot of people see him as not doing very well, and as well on the economy. So the expectation now begins to crumble because people expected that he will do a lot more than what he has done now. And this is why his popularity is declining.
You talk about high expectations of Buhari prior to his presidency. Could that be the reason why we are seeing cracks in the ruling All Progressive Congress?
Talking about the conflict within the APC, the president has not done really well in trying to call the party leaders in the states to order, because there's this issue of where some few people trying to impose their own will on the party. And the president has just remained quiet. He should have called these party leaders to order. What is happening?
With all these kind of, you know, divisions within the ruling coalition, do you think there'll be enough time before the elections for them to come back together as a formidable force to win the elections?
Well, all hope is not lost, because in Nigeria, there is this politics of ethnicity. In the Southwest, announcing they're not going to give the president an automatic ticket. There has to be an internal democracy. The president has to submit himself to a primary election within the party. If he wins the primary election, then he becomes a flag bearer. While some are saying no, the president, he should be given the first chance. If he said he's not going to contest, then otherwise he should contest. The Igbo, which is the South-South, are now saying if we don't support Buhari, it will take them another 8 to 16 years before the Igbos could be president of Nigeria. So there is the likelihood that the parties might come together and solve their internal differences.
DW's Abdullahi Tankobala. And back to our comments section on the Ghana story, our top story. The president promised 100,000 jobs for unemployed youth. Eunice Ndesoya says small businesses are the backbone of every economy. Create a conducive environment for small businesses to thrive. If it's done right, they eventually grow into corporations.
And Saeed Abdul Hafiz says, sure, he's on the right. My president has the best of speeches, but on paper, nothing is there to show. Talk only, no action.
And another comment from Abdullahi Kale says, change the change before youth change you. I think he's talking about, you know, the promises that the leaders make should be delivered on time, or else the youth will step in to make things much better for them.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
It should not only be promises, but it should be things that people can see and work with.
Ayubongo Joseph says, not belong to a ruling party, but a Ghanaian, you are like a stranger. So when he said the youth, I would have wished he comes clear. Many thanks for those comments. Keep them flowing. And the page is DW Africa.
You're listening to Africa Link. Thank you for staying with us. My name is Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Drop your comments there and we'll definitely read them live on air whenever we can.
Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing the tribulations and silent struggles that childless women in Kenya go through to save their marriages. When we got married, my husband and my parents-in-law loved me. After 2 years of marriage, my husband started telling me that he wanted a child. My major problem is that I had frequent abdominal pains and I had no one to tell so that I could get help.
Another big story we have is thousands of Eritreans living in Israel remain worried after being threatened with jail terms in case they don't voluntarily allow to be repatriated to third countries.
I'm really in danger. I left my country because of danger. So I know I'm a refugee. That's why we came here in Israel to ask for protection.
But first, let's go to Uganda, where cases of child labor are on the rise, with well over 2 million children engaged in the worst forms of child labor. Many have to endure the cold evenings to sell family merchandise with little or no pay for their services. According to Uganda National Bureau of Statistics report, children aged between 5 to 17 years are most affected by this regrettable growing trend. Our correspondent Alex Jita took a trip to Western Uganda and sent us this report.
It is 6 a.m. and I see a boy crossing Kampala Road in the center of the city. He is rushing down to Nakasero Market, one of the most popular markets in Kampala. As I run to catch up with him, I realize that he is actually running away from me. But it's because I'm wearing a yellow shirt, the color donned by Kampala City Council operatives, who arrest street vendors. Finally, I get to talk to him. He tells me about his ordeal and what keeps him in town till 9 in the evening.
My name is Bugembe Abdurrahman. I came from Zimbabwe. I'm not in school because I have no school fees. So I sell my uncle's polythene bags in Nakasero Market and I get here at 5 a.m. I have not been here for long.
At 13 years, Bugembe is one of many children exploited in child labor. He says his uncle does not pay him for the work done, but he wants to go back to school and realize his dream of being a doctor. Bugembe is not alone in Kampala or elsewhere in Uganda. In Ruti Market near Mbarara in western Uganda, I meet 13-year-old Collins Turiamu Hachi. He has huge responsibilities, including paying his school fees and that of his young brother. He earns his living by packing sacks of bananas.
I pack bags. For each bag, I am paid 3,000 or 2,000. But in a day, I can pack like 3 or 4 bags. So I use this money to buy books and school fees. And then my parents also top up when they have.
Turiamu Hachi only catches a break when the banana trucks have all left for Kampala. With his hard work rate, he has a dream of completing school one day. The Ugandan Bureau of Statistics indicates that children in 45% of households below the poverty line are forced out of schools to work and supplement their parents' incomes. But apart from government passing strong laws criminalizing child labor, implementation and follow-ups are not done. Most human rights offices wait for the affected children to report these abuses, and one wonders how many of these children actually know their rights. Topista Trembi works with the Uganda Human Rights Office in Mbarara.
They are supposed to do that work that is in line with their age. We want to guide the parents whom you find using these children to do work that is really beyond their age, and we condemn it.
But bodies created to fight it, including the Human Rights Commission, have reported a lot of challenges in their job. The Ugandan Parliament passed a law in 2016 indicating that anyone who employs a child commits a felony, but its implementation remains a challenge.
Alex Jeter reporting. Well, Isaac, it's quite sad that these children have to go to work and it's
Exactly, children late who, in the evenings.
Yes. Well, this brought about comments on our Facebook page and WhatsApp. John in England says that it is very sad that African leaders focus on their lives and how to represent their country. They don't think about what the future holds for children. And he's saying, I'm really sorry to be born there, but still love Africa.
Oh, well said. At least he still loves, you know, his continent. Woman Tola Bass says, criminalizing child labor is treating symptoms. A government that promotes economic deprivation, thereby creating a fertile environment for child labor, cannot be trusted to solve the issue of child labor.
And Kate Yenge Samrib says the leading cause of everything is poverty.
David from Southeast Nigeria says the problem is still the government. When they make life easier for the poor citizens, no one will like his or her children to leave school and start facing child labor.
And last but not least here, Daniel Wanyama from Nairobi says, so bad, this should not happen at the 21st century. Better colonial times then.
Well, thanks for your comments. We'll be back after this.
Use on.
And for you, Zone, a segment that focuses on issues that directly affect the youth, we take you to Kenya, where rural communities still believe that women struggling to have children are not worthy of any respect and are often ostracized by their communities. As a result, men have been divorced and chased out of their marital homes. Although in urban areas where infertility cases are quite normal and are treated, for women living in rural areas, treatment is still a distant dream, as Diana Wanyonyi reports from Mombasa.
A group of women are chatting in Kiswahili at the Dalanruki Miranga Mission. It's a home for the elderly, widows, the sick, orphans and homeless people. But amongst their numbers are also women who weren't able to have children and have been chased out of their marital home. Jedisa Sao is now 39 years old. When her parents died, she was forced to drop out of school and start waiting work in a local hotel in order to support herself. By the age of 14, she was already married, and 2 years later, her failure to bear a child caused problems in her marriage.
Vile tulioana alikuwa ananipenda, hata wazazi wake walikuwa wananipenda. Nimekaa huko miaka miwili.
When we got married, my husband and my parents-in-law loved me. After 2 years of marriage, my husband started telling me that he wanted a child. My major problem is that I had frequent abdominal pains and I had no one to tell so that I could get help. His parents started saying that their son should not stay with a barren woman.
Jedisa is not alone. There are more than 30 barren women at the Dalanruki Miranga Mission Home, which was founded in 2003. The founder, Dalanruki, doesn't just offer them accommodation. He also provides counseling and creates different projects to allow them to rejoin society and even start up small businesses.
I can teach them so that they can have a hope to live, because despite the challenges they have faced, life must go on.
In Kisumundogo slums, I met Jane Atieno. Today, she is 59 years old and a widow. Just like Jedisa, she was not also able to give birth. But her case is different. Her late husband did not chase her out of her marriage, nor did he marry another wife. But in spite of that, she still faces stigma from the wider community and other relatives.
Lazima mtu utatengwa kidogo sababu haukufanya vile watu wanafanya.
People will always discriminate when you don't conform to their expectations. I had to hear lots of bad things. If you are weak, you might run. But if you are strong, then you will be brave enough to stay put and thank God for who you are. So many years have passed now, and I know that I am as beautiful as other women.
Despite Jane Atieno's strength of belief, a lot of people see infertile women as unworthy. Dr. Charles Mwangome, a psychiatrist in Mombasa, also thinks some of the problems can lie with the men.
So there's a lot of stigma, and themselves as women, they feel that they have failed, especially when they have an infertility problem themselves, when it's just a simple thing of low sperm count.
There is still a long way to go in rural areas.
Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa with that report.
Speaking out.
Israel wants to deport thousands of Eritreans and Sudanese asylum seekers within the next months. The Israeli government wants them to either leave voluntarily to a third country or send them to prison. Many Israelis have come out against the deportation plans by the government. For the asylum seekers, it is a time of uncertainty. Thousands of them protested outside the Rwandan embassy in Israel, calling on the country not to cooperate with the Israeli plan to deport them. This report by Tanya Kramer is now presented by Crispin Mokideu.
Teklit Michael fled his home country Eritrea more than 12 years ago and sought asylum in Israel. Now his future is once again uncertain because he's facing possible deportation.
The situation now is very sensitive, especially for me personally and for my community, the people I love, because we are now in the situation of deportation and unlimited period of time imprisonment. So the situation is very tough.
At the Eritrean Community Center, the new government policy is on everyone's mind. Their choice? Go to prison or take a free plane ticket, a payment of almost 3,000 euros, and leave for a third country. In the last decade, Israel has recognized only 10 people as refugees. Others have received group protection. Teklit says he never received a response to his asylum request.
They call me many names. Sometimes migrant worker, sometimes infiltrator, sometimes cancer, everything. But I am not this person. I am really in danger. I left my country because of danger. So I know I am a refugee. That's why we came here in Israel to ask for protection.
There has been a fierce public debate in Israel about the asylum seekers' fate. Human rights activists warn their safety cannot be guaranteed if they are deported. Tal Steiner is the head of the legal department in the NGO Hotline for Refugees and Migrants.
We are talking about less than 40,000 people, immigrants, asylum seekers in Israel, who seek asylum in a land of 8 million people. This is less than 0.5% of Israeli population. So our first question to the government is, why can't Israel absorb those people, give them shelter, allow them to build their lives here? This is so much less than other countries have to deal with.
Many asylum seekers are held in a detention center in the desert in the south of Israel. Others have settled in the southern neighborhoods of Tel Aviv, a poorer area of the city. While some residents support the migrants, many, like Ayala Sinwami, blame them for rising crime and want them to leave.
These are foreigners. These are infiltrators. It is impossible to live like this. All our infrastructure collapsed. The sewage systems, the education, welfare, everything. All the budget is going towards them.
Those Israelis who want to help them are writers like Yoshua Sobol. Together with rabbis, former diplomats, Holocaust survivors, pilots and flight crews, they are calling on the government to stop the deportations.
The Jewish state, we are obliged to deal with refugees and with asylum seekers as we would have liked the European countries and the USA at the time to have treated Jewish refugees who tried to save their souls running away from persecution and from extermination.
That report was compiled by Tania Kramer.
Now, do you know which country is the best place to be a woman in Africa? Well, Rwanda and our own Wanjiku Maura and Eddie Maker Jr., the only two, went to find out the rest of the continent, how it compares to Rwanda. And they asked, what do you think can be done to increase women's participation in politics? And on Facebook page, there are many comments. Eunice, please.
Yes, Ali Cham from The Gambia says, how comes Rwanda is the best place to be a woman? Good question.
He wonders. John Okari from Nairobi says, not really. The ideal country for a woman to feel good is Kenya because resources accompany goodness.
I would agree with him.
Okay.
And Miriam from Burkina Faso says women have the right to participate in political processes that affect them, their families, and the societies. Countries with increased women participation and leadership in civil societies and political parties tend to be more inclusive, responsive, egalitarian, and democratic.
She goes on to say when women meaningfully participate in peace processes, they can help to expand the scope of agreements and improve the prospects for durable peace. That's a good one from Miriam in Burkina Faso.
Indeed. And the last comment here from Christian from Kenya. He says, I hope other countries in Africa follow what Zambia and Rwanda are doing. I know my country, Kenya, is improving with women representation now at 22.78%.
Now, if you'd like to find out more on what Eddie Michael Jr. and Wanjiko Mwaura were up to with what else, just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa. There is a very beautiful and good video waiting for you to get more to know why Rwanda is the best place for the women. On behalf of the team here, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiro. Join us again same time tomorrow.